Sports. Spoken here.
Right now, Adam Hogue, Jared Payton, Mark Carmen.
The beat is on.
You're 100% right.
This is The Beat on 720 WGN.
Good afternoon. Beautiful day in Chicago. Happy Mother's Day to all the mothers out there driving around Chicago, listening at home. Hope you're enjoying your day. Adam Hogue, Mark Carmen, and Jared Payton here with you.
I'm nervous. I'm already nervous. It's 3-1. The Washington Nationals on top of the greatest pitcher that's ever thrown the baseball, Jake Arrieta. We have a streak on the line. We'll do baseball after baseball is over, but a streak is on the line.
Which
today.
Streak is this? He has like 1,000 of them.
I actually have a list of stats today.
Okay.
I've got 17 gazillion stats that we can most definitely go through if you'd like. But, I mean, my favorite stat right now as far as Jake Arrieta is concerned, I mean, the Cubs, since the last time Jake Arrieta lost a baseball team, they're 69-26. That spans 95 games. That's a winning percentage of 726. That's like Jared Payton-esque right there.
Yes, truly it is.
Right?
Yeah, it really is.
I mean, other Jared Payton-esque stats around Arrieta, 22-1 with a .86 ERA in his last 26 regular season starts. Arrieta's won 17 decisions in a row. That's the fourth most since 1913, which is a long time ago. Again, Jared Payton-esque.
Yes. I mean, Arrieta, I thought you were going to say something, though, Hogue. Talking about the best pitcher in town, I thought you would have something to say about that.
Well, yeah. I mean, there's a couple of them.
You know?
Once again, we have to remind Mark Carmen that there are two teams in town.
Yeah. He forgets sometimes.
I spent 4 hours yesterday doing that, but...
Well, I could tell you that Chris Sale, who you're...
Referring to?
Yes.
Yes.
Is the first Chicago White Sox pitcher to be 7-0 since the 1913 season as well. So there's that.
Love the 1913 season.
And I know that Chris Sale is a guy that is not the only one doing work on the South Side. There, Jose Quintana's on the mound today, and if he does what he's done to this point, unlike Jake Arrieta, who's failing us at this very moment, the White Sox will be 13-1. When
However,
Sale or Quintana pitches, so there.
13-1?
Yes. Did you
Sale,
see?
Sale, Quintana pitch. And I will. I almost had a heart attack back in the green room before the show. Jared Payton witnessed it.
Yeah, it did.
Because Herm Schneider came out of the dugout as Jose Quintana was shaking out his arm.
Oof.
He stayed in the game, however.
That's big. That's big.
I'm still not sure if my blood pressure's back to the level it should be at. I'd like to see Jose Quintana alive and well.
That is important. And we again, as Adam started out the show here, we want to wish the mothers a very happy. We're going to make this a sports happy Mother's Day. And as we start the show here at 312-981-7200, we're going to try to create the perfect sports mom. Like, what does that look like? What does that entail? How, you know, taking you to games, how does she comport herself at the game? Is she super passionate? Is she laying in the weeds? And if you would like to give thanks to your mom for how she helped you along in your sports life, be it if it was just Little League or maybe you made it all the way to high school, perhaps you made it to college or you made it like Jared Payton to the tallest mountaintop, the NFL, there's, you know, mom deserves credit, whatever level that is. Does she not?
Yes, she does. A lot of stuff. I mean, I can help you out because that's a part of my childhood, man. My mom drove me and everybody else, all the kids, to all the games, whether it was in St. Louis, whether we were going all the way down south to Florida, packing up that van and just sacrificing a lot. So just for me to be able to reach my dreams.
I did not make it to the NFL, although I did have the Chicago Bears. They told me that if there was an eighth round in the draft, they would have selected me back in 2008 when I was coming out of the University of Wisconsin.
I believe that.
With zero career carries.
Yeah, but they liked your attitude.
They just liked the attitude and the overall athleticism. And
you were a numbers guy, too. So.
Right. I mean, I had the analytics off the charts. But I did... at the University of Wisconsin, make a diving game-winning catch for the Daily Cardinal softball team to beat the Badger Herald for like the 10th year in a row or whatever it was with the bases loaded and whatever amount of innings we played. I don't remember. But I like to think that my mom was with me there in that moment.
Right.
Yeah.
See? And I mean, you know, I'm feeling
like, literally that's the height of my athletic career.
Well, and you know, I can relate to you, Adam, because if there was an extra round in the NBA draft back in 1996, I clearly would have been the choice of the Chicago Bulls out of the
third round. Yeah,
whatever it would have been. I don't, you know, I would have been picked. I led an Elite Eight run in the University of Iowa intramurals. And, yeah, we did run up against Tim Dwight, one of the great punt returners in the history of the NFL, but I did burst by Tim Dwight and lay it in to give us a commanding, at the time, 2-0 lead. Did not hold. We lost by 20. But I did beat Timmy Dwight to the hole with a little shimmy shake, and that was at that moment that I looked to my left, and I saw, hey, it's John Paxson right over there, and he you know, he came up to me after, he was like, if we can find a way to get you, we're going to get you.
Right.
And, you know, and then as I ran into Pax at his press conference this year when him and Gar Forman were sitting there at the table talking about how they're going to reshape the Bulls, he came back up to me and said, Carm, you know, you're doing great work on the radio and we love the way you're contributing to Chicago from a broadcasting standpoint, but if we could go back and do it again, we would have made you a Chicago Bull.
That was the biggest regret?
It was a huge regret because...
Like even more than Tyrus Thomas?
Well, even though they won the even though they won the NBA title in 97 and 98, if you recall... When they reshaped the franchise and Michael and Scottie left in 99, that team fell on some hard times. And if they had had me in there with a couple of years of seasoning, they think that the rebuild would have gone a lot quicker.
I keep forgetting that you're 35.
42.
Oh.
Yeah, I know. Wow. I know. I know. I know. I know. I know it's very painful. 312. You don't exactly know the feeling of my pain, but and hey, we're all happy to be here. No complaints. 312-981-7200 for real. Opportunity to call up, get yourself on the radio, and thank Mom for all she did for you on either the sports diamond, the sports court, the football field, the soccer.
Pitch.
That's right. Thank you. Bowling, whatever it would be. I mean, what's your nickname for your mom again?
Copay.
I mean, Copay was all over the place.
All over the place. You got to thank her. She's partying right now, though.
What's Copay doing right
now? She's in Wisconsin at a jazz fest.
Wow.
Yeah. It's kind of crazy when you have a newborn and you're so used to partying and hanging out, and now your mom's out, you know, popping bottles and having a good time while you're at home.
Popping bottles.
Shaking bottles, you know, with formula in them.
Right.
Kind of crazy.
I've never heard it put that way. My mom's out popping bottles. I'm home shaking bottles.
That's it.
Hashtag Jared Payton.
That's just my life now.
Reality of life right now in Jared Payton.
Full circle. Copay loves to help, though, right? She'll step in at a moment's notice.
Anytime. Just not this weekend. So right. She's like a built-in babysitter.
Well, it's Mother's Day weekend.
She's got to have a good time.
Shout out to your beautiful wife over there.
Yes, we spent the morning at a gardening store looking at flowers.
That sounds...
James had a good time.
Who made that decision?
Well, the mother did. It's Mother's Day.
Did your wife have any desires today, Jared? Did you do anything nice?
Yeah, all she wanted to do was get out of the house and not have the three of us, my son and my daughter, just kind of intrude. So she wanted to go for a nice jog and nice walk. So we did that, and we had breakfast this morning. So it was a nice...
I thought you meant the three of us
not
intruding.
She's actually probably listening right now.
Okay. Because
she loves the three of us.
See, and that's your wife is speaking to the Today.com poll that I went through, and it shows that most...
Is that a regular site for you, Today.com?
This one was not regular. I was doing some Mother's Day polling because we were sitting in for Matt Bubala Friday overnight, and, you know, I was doing some Mother's Day talk, and so I was looking for some polls. What do moms want on Mother's Day? And it turns out that versus spend time with the kids versus... spend time alone, the higher percentage went to?
Spend time alone.
Give me some alone time.
Okay.
Because moms, that's what they do in the house. I mean, knowing my wife and seeing what she does in our household, she is the glue that holds it all together. And she deserved a little bit of time today to kind of go and do what she needed to do by herself. I respect that.
I respect that, too, because on Father's Day, you know what I want to do?
Yeah, what Sleep. Do you want to do?
I want to sit on the couch and watch the U.S. Open.
Well, see, that, and that was another question. What would you rather have for the mothers? A piece of jewelry? No, it didn't say it was a high-end situation. I mean, maybe. So that could be the gumball out of the old the gumball ring. But a piece of jewelry or 2 extra hours of sleep. What would the moms rather have? But the answer was?
Sleep.
Yeah, I don't blame. That's a great answer.
give me the 2 hours of sleep.
And Yeah. Hey, by the way, you mentioned that you were on overnight on Friday night. Can we just go through your weekend? I forgot to do this yesterday with you. So you were at the White Sox game Friday night.
I went Cubs game in the afternoon.
Okay, let me start. Let me give you full credit here. Cubs game afternoon.
Yes.
Sox game at night.
Yes.
Then you come here to WGN, you do the overnight.
Yes.
You're back on the radio yesterday at 3 o'clock for four more hours at a great derby party next door, which was a lot of fun.
Really was. Thank you to Howells and Hood.
And then you go to the Cubs this morning.
I went to Cubs this morning, yes.
And now you're back here for another 3 hours of sports brilliance.
See, what radio and broadcasting is to me, to be honest, is some form of illicit drug. It's like I am addicted to the microphone. I am addicted to like the ballparks, to the stadiums. Somehow, you know, I wake up today. It's a beautiful day. There's a million things I could do, but I don't really have anything scheduled. And it's like a magnet.
Today was an impromptu visit to Wrigley.
Yes, I thought about doing it last night, but yeah, I woke up this morning. I'm like, my goal today was to get up early, get in a workout, get over to Wrigley and get here. I knew when I went to bed last night that workout in the morning was low probability. We're going to have to go post-show. So I went over. It's rare that, you know, it's awesome to be there pregame. Today was awesome. We got some interviews that I want to bring back, at least some small stuff. Talked to Pedro Strop about Mother's Day. He had some great stuff on his mom. Same thing for Jason Hayward. And Justin Grimm was extremely entertaining.
Really?
Yes. So I have like a little Justin Grimm action. I don't know if we'll get to all that today. If not, we'll have it up on the website. But some, and we will for sure play. I asked Joe Madden a couple questions in pregame, one about the use of Pedro Strop, which he gave an interesting answer.
Okay.
And then I also asked him about, you know, before Chris Bryant spoke today, and I got some stuff on that too. And we'll do all this a little bit later when the baseball games are over. But Chris Bryant's talking about launch angle and all this nerd stuff that I want to play. But he also, he called Joe Madden a genius. And everywhere you walk around in there, this guy's, you know, he's got so much love. So I asked him about how do you balance being their friend versus being their manager?
I get it.
You know? Sounds interesting.
So he has a really good response on that. And you should read that, Adam, because I feel like it's up your alley.
I will. So we'll get to all that. Sounds great. Your stuff, the hardest working man in Chicago right here, Mark Carmen.
Gosh.
Crazy weekend for you. We'll get to all that. Also, we haven't gotten Jared Payton's thoughts on the draft yet.
No, we can.
Because, JP, you weren't here last Sunday.
I know.
So
we should do that coming
back. We'll
dive
into some football. Also, we didn't get into any of the Matt Slauson talk yesterday because we were so horsey centralized. And Matt Slauson is signed with the Chargers and just an interesting situation, at least to me, that played out this week. So we'll get to that as well. And Tommy Christian, who runs, former Northwestern linebacker, who runs a gym up in Northbrook called TC Boost, and he trained a bunch of NFL draft prospects this year, is going to be here in studio with us, too, in a little bit. So give us a fascinating look at what really goes into the training of these NFL draft prospects. It's The Beat here on 720 WGN. Adam Hoge, Mark Carmen, and Jared Payton here with you till 7 o'clock.
So a note on the text line about the Mother's Day and what moms want. Hi, guys. As an older mother with grown children who I realize are busy with work and their own lives, a visit from them is all some of us really want.
That's sweet.
She doesn't want the alone time. She wants a visit. So that's a beautiful thing.
That's a tough part, isn't it? Like, as the kids get older and start having their own lives and having families, it's trying to be able to have that time as one, as a family. And that's what we try to do with my sister. And my sister's pregnant. She'll be due in August. So it's like there's more grandchildren coming. So we got to make sure we always keep mom in check.
And a reminder to everybody out there from At the Carm, most important thing you can do, give your dad a call, see him once a week, do something. I mean, step it up. You're not too busy to at least pick up the phone for 5 minutes a day, say hello.
No, Facebook posts don't count.
That's true.
Come on. You got to see face to face.
Just thinking of, I tweeted this earlier because my mom passed away in 2009. But so I come from, different perspective that a lot of people out there have the same thing. I mean, you know, their mothers are gone, and this day is just a little bit different, thinking back more rather than forward. But if your mother's still alive, give her a hug. Don't take her for granted, that's for sure. But my mom's last White Sox game was the 2008 blackout game.
I was there with you.
I saw you. I definitely saw you that night.
I vended and covered the game on the field, I believe, if memory serves.
Pulling off two jobs at once. The hardest working man in Chicago.
Got to make that money, got to live that dream.
Love it.
I was undercover.
I just have a great photo of her and my dad and I all together after the game, and she was so happy. And at the time, we had no idea that she was going to get sick, and she wasn't even alive by the time opening day came around the next spring. But so that turned out to be our last game. But for me, that photo is just a great memory, and
that's awesome.
What I think about really every time I'm at the ballpark, but especially on Mother's Day.
Yeah, it's weird because I look back at my time and my dad passing in 99. That was right when I went to the University of Miami. So it was probably at the moment where I needed my dad the most to be able to help me. And, you know, for a kid who'd only played 2 years of high school football, I needed him at that moment. Didn't have that male figure in my life. And my mom basically was that for me. I mean, she helped me out in the conversation she had with me when times got hard and, you know, I wasn't playing and how to keep it going and stay strong. I really do. I owe almost everything to her because all that she sacrificed to be able to help me achieve what I wanted to achieve. And man, my mom showed me how to love. She showed me how to never give up. And I'm in debt forever for everything that she's done for my sister and myself.
Beautiful stuff. Beautiful stuff. Let's play off our little Bears tease on the Matt Slauson getting cut, which was obvious that it was coming, but like surprising to me when it became obvious that they're moving on from Matt Slauson, who was a very, very solid contributor to the Bears. And I don't know if you can really look at like an upgrade. Am I missing something here?
No, I mean, I think they got worse by letting him go. You guys know this, that I grade out every game, and I don't pretend to be like to know everything that's happening on every play and really have it to be the most accurate thing in the world. However, you know, I do point out over a large period of time that I think those grades are mostly accurate in a much larger sample size. And over the last three seasons, Matt Slauson was the Bears' best offensive lineman.
Yeah.
And that includes last season.
So where do you guys think the disconnect is?
The disconnect is you start to look at what Ryan Pace was doing in this draft. And you tell me if I'm wrong, because I know you cover them and I watch a lot as well. You see this team getting faster. They're trying to maybe do something a little bit different. And I don't think that Matt Slauson fit in with where they're going. But to me, it's hard because of a guy who has had great seasons when he's been here in Chicago, plus a guy that's a utility guy when you need him. And that's one position had on the offensive line where you need as much depth as possible, especially a guy that can play guard for you or center if you need him to.
Yeah.
It's just hard for me to say that they're going to be better off without him, especially with all the problems with Hronis Grasu. Don't know what he's going to do long term. You just don't know, and I think keeping a guy like him would have been beneficial for the Bears.
Yeah, for me, I let me get into this a little bit later. We got to break and get the news here, but I understand what the Bears are thinking, but my problem is still what JP just brought up, and that's the depth. And God forbid Cody Whitehair, your new left guard, goes down with an injury in training camp.
Don't say that.
All of a sudden, your depth, you'd love to have Matt Slauson.
312-981-7200. Simple question for you, football fans. Do you trust this new Bears regime? We're two drafts in now and one season in. Matt Slauson, just a small part of it, but do you trust the direction of the franchise? We'll do that coming back and break down a little bit more of the draft as well, right after the news on 720 WGN.
Surprised you're listening to The Beat?
No, I'm not surprised at anything. I don't want to answer any questions like that.
Chicago Sports Spoken here. This is The Beat on 720 WGN.
Welcome back. This is The Beat. Adam Hogue, Mark Carman, Jared Payton here with you till 6 o'clock, and joined now by very exciting guest, Tommy Christian from TC Boost, a sports performance gym up in Northbrook, and seen you a little bit around Northwestern lately as Danny Vitale and Dean Lowry were training for the NFL draft. I know you work with them and some of the other prospects, but thanks for coming down here into the studio and telling us a little bit about how all this works.
It's great to be here. It's an honor. You know, funny story, I remember back in my engineering days when I was in Detroit, I would, you know, drive around, listen to sports radio and think, man, you know, this would be a great, you know, kind of career for me. So this is kind of a neat taste of kind of your guys' world. So I appreciate being down here.
Well, Tommy, you talked about just 99 is when you got into the training and the business. I graduated in 99 to go to the University of Miami, and I remember how training was back then and what guys were doing and trying to get ready, especially guys that would come back to the U to train for the NFL. But I was watching Hey Rookie this morning, and it just seemed what these guys are doing now is totally different than what was going down in 1999.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just, you know, maybe it's the media with all the NFL coverage with the combine events, but you know, it's a whole industry that's grown, you know, and the, you know, multi-million dollar facilities and usually warm weather locations. You know, it's just become a really big business. You know, when I first got into the field, you know, just the term sports performance didn't really exist. You had strength and conditioning coaches at the college level. You know, for athletes that were in, you know, high school, you know, you're either working out at your high school or you're at, you know, a Bally's Fitness or something like that, you know. And then it was usually, I think, college strength coaches that were doing the preparation with their players for the combine. And, you know, just with the prevalence of, you know, the 40 times and, you know, how that impacts their draft status, you know, it became, you know, I think, you know, a great value for people to make bigger investments in terms of seeing, you know, how can we, you know, drastically or as much as possible move somebody's draft stock through improvements and, you know, objectable measures in terms of like 40-yard dash, vertical jump, broad jump. So it's changed a lot just from the focus and the demand and the need for it.
Tommy, do you, for those and say like they're in their, let's call it in their 50s, and they're looking to perhaps get back some of their conditioning, maybe lose a couple pounds, feel, you know, just stronger in general. What's your recommendation for somebody who's going from, well, you know what, I work a ton and I occasionally work out maybe twice a month to like getting in a regular 3-day a week, I can get myself fit type of mode?
Yeah, I think the way that we do it at TC Boost, like, you know, we think about with our adult fitness is, you know, as you, you know, grow up, you know, you get a career, you have a family, like you really deal with limited amount of time. So if, you know, we think if you have 2 or 3 hours a week, how could we maximize what you're doing in that in terms of your life and your health? And so, you know, I think having a workout program where you have a coach who's actually taking you through it, you know, so you're going to have more value in that time that you spend than trying to figure it out on your own. And, you know, spending a variety of, you know, interval based, you know, thinking about cardiovascular health, body composition, and staying athletic. You know, life is about movement, and, you know, you don't want to, you know, go sit on a machine and then go play basketball with your kid and pop an Achilles because you haven't jumped in 15 years, you know. So we like to mix in athletic development within that.
Tommy Christian joining us here in studio. He's
I'm standing up to do the interview. Go ahead. Need some movement going on here.
After what you ate today.
Yeah, get some burpees in.
It's been a rough day of food consumption.
A lot of food. Yes. You told us about it before we came out of the air. But Tommy, of course, the former Northwestern linebacker, now helps run TC Boost up in Northbrook. So covering the draft and the Bears as closely as I do, I always hear from rookies, guys that get drafted, they spend, first of all, this whole offseason, they don't really get an offseason because as soon as the season ends, they're going into training for the combine and the pro days. And it's a different kind of training than really what they need to quickly turn around and get back into football shape, which these rookie mini camps start up a week or 2 weeks right after the draft, depending on which team you play for. So take us a little bit inside of that process and how important it is for them to train a certain way to put up those numbers they need to do and then to quickly get back in the football shape if they can do it.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, it's a really unique shift for these guys because, you know, for the, you know, up until this point, it's been all about training to be a better football player. And then all of a sudden they shift into this mode and it's right after, you know, hopefully they came off a bowl game. They have 3 days off. You know, that's kind of what we did for our guys. And you have about 6 weeks to get them ready for the combine. You know, if they're playing in the Senior Bowl, you know, it's literally 6 weeks of preparation. So now it's a very focused, intense time, and it's really preparing for a track meet, you know, which is very different, you know. And the training during that time period, it looks very similar from day to day. You know, in fact, by the end of the process, guys always joke that it's kind of like Groundhog Day. You know, you're coming in, you're working 40 stances, you're working your technique and top speed acceleration. Our philosophy is really very much mechanics based. We're doing a ton of film analysis and really trying to break down and teach them how to move the right way so they can improve their 40 time, maximize that. But, you know, there's a right way to run a three cone, a pro shuttle, there's technique and all those things. And they're not necessarily, you know, football specific, but they're combine specific. So they have to prepare for that. you know, so it is kind of a unique environment for them. It's really focused on that, and it's not necessarily what they're going to be doing, you know, after the combine as they get ready for mini camp. It shouldn't be.
No, it's amazing to see what those guys do and to try to get yourself ready. It is. It's pretty much like Groundhog's Day. I had a chance to work out with Don Beebe back in the day, and I remember how it was every single day. It was almost the same thing. You get so nervous because this is the biggest job interview of your life, and you're in a fishbowl once you get to the combine, which is a whole nother story. But to be able to do all these different sports, so you guys deal with these kids that are playing football, basketball. Now kids are coming in. How hard is it to be able to do all these different sports and train? Because each sport is different for what you're trying to train.
It is. You know, I think, you know, one mistake I think, you know, a lot of times parents and athletes make when they're younger is they over-specialize, you know. So, you know, we get a lot of demand for, you know, I want really sports-specific training, even like position-specific training. And, you know, our opinion, you know, for a 14, 15-year-old is that, you know, that would be a mistake. Really what the needs of an athlete in terms of development, you know, is mobility, it's stability, having proper mechanics, being able to move the right way, develop strength, you know, develop a body that's balanced and, you know, and that has some confidence. And that's going to apply really well whether you're playing basketball, football, tennis, you know, whatever the case may be. So, you know, I think it's really an over-specialization, and really the needs of athletic development at that age should look very similar. You know, there's a couple, you know, outliers like, you know, swimming or a pitcher in baseball where you have to do some special things in terms of shoulder care. But, you know, for the most part, they should look pretty similar.
Tommy Christensen, TC Boost. If you have a fitness question, you want to know how to get yourself to the next level, we are here for you. 312-981-7200. Somebody told me the other day, don't do yoga. You're going to hurt yourself. You should stick to Pilates. What do you think of that recommendation?
Well, I don't know that I could talk as an expert on yoga or Pilates because it's not what we do.
I'm going to believe anything you say right now. You don't need to be an expert.
I would say, in my opinion, I think those are things that you do, you know, and maybe I'm biased, you know, but I think you would do those things after you have your, you know, your basics, you know, strength and just, you know, interval-based training in place. And I think those can be nice additions in terms of mobility, you know, and some flexibility type work, but I would be the wrong person to judge between them.
Okay.
So when you got, sorry, Mark.
That's okay. It's okay. I appreciate the honesty.
When you got done playing football, how did you transition to what you're doing now? Why did you want to get into that and keep staying in the business of what's now called sports performance?
Well, you know, I started out as a mechanical engineer. So I was in the automotive world when I graduated and, you know, and I always thought, you know, if I didn't like designing automobiles, you know, I'd love to go back and be a football coach and, you know, maybe be a teacher because, you know, being a college athlete, sports had such a big impact on my life. My brother played in the NFL for 11 years and kind of just tracking him through that as well, you know, was sort of always in the back of my mind. And, you know, after a few years in automotive, I, you know, really started to kind of catch the fire for a dream to do something where the goal of my life wasn't making money for some company, but really to be able to make an impact. And I thought sports would be a great way to do it.
All right, well, we'll take a quick break here. Want to stick around because I've got more questions for you. He's Tommy Christian from TC Boost. A fascinating conversation about sports performance and how we train some of these guys for the NFL draft because it's something a lot of people wonder about. It's Adam Hogue, Mark Carmen, Jared Payton here on The Beat. We'll be right back. 720 WGN. Back here on The Beat, Adam Hogue, Mark Carmen, Jared Payton here with you till 6 o'clock. We're joined by Tommy Christian, the former Northwestern linebacker, he now runs TC Boost up in Northbrook, a sports performance gym. And we were just discussing during the break kind of how what you guys do differs from maybe some of these bigger places that you might hear about in San Diego and Arizona and Florida. But you were kind of emphasizing the importance of what it comes down to or the measurables once you actually get to the combine. And I just remember hearing from both Dan Vitale and Dean Lowry during the winter that they felt like they were maybe the two most prepared people for those drills that they went through, and in large part because of the work that you did with them.
Yeah, well, you know, it meant a lot to hear them say that, you know, because I feel like that's really our mission and our purpose when we're training those guys and they're trusting us with their career. you know, it's our job to get them ready for that, you know, like we were talking about, that track meet, you know, that the combine is. So, you know, we really focus on that to be sure that the time that we spend with them is focused on the areas that's going to most impact their draft status. And, you know, and it really comes down to those measurables in terms of what we can impact. You know, their film is tremendously important. It's too late to do anything about that.
Right.
You know, that's already
yeah.
in the, you know, the hay's in the barn there. So, you know, we're going to work on the next best thing that we can do. And usually that's, you know, the 40 being the most important, but, you know, all of those measurables, we want to do a great job.
How big is the facility? Because I see some of these places are pretty big. It's got to be a big place to look at just the website with all the stuff you have in there. It's got to be a big
yeah.
place.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, being in Chicago, it has to be indoors, of course. So,
yeah.
You know, if we went to warmer weather, we could probably save a little bit on our rent. But we have a 10,000 square foot facility, which works great for us. We have 60 yards wall-to-wall, so we're able to actually train that top speed setting, which is really important in terms of the 40-yard dash. You know, and you just need that open space to be able to run. I think the biggest thing, the biggest determinant is the length so that you can train top speed. You know, you can't have a 45-yard gym and expect them to hit top speed at 40 and stop in 5 yards. So you need that extra space with some crash mats.
So I hate to crush the dreams of our listeners, but probably most of them are not going to be going to the NFL. So for the average person that might be interested in what they're hearing right now, how can they get involved with TC Boost?
Yeah, I mean, the you know best thing to do would be go to our website, tcboost.com, you know, and we have a lot of programs. You know, it's obviously high profile, the draft type work, but, you know, the core of what we're doing is really working with youth and high school athletes and really, you know, developing their speed and athleticism the right way. And, you know, and then we're also working with their parents. So,
yeah, that's where I wanted to get to. I'm glad you led into that, because I'm wondering what your advice is to a parent out there who's trying to get their kid to the next level. And some parents, you know, some people would say, hey, you should play a bunch of sports, don't specialize. But you're talking about getting to high school at that point, maybe specialization does need to occur. And, you know, how much should they be doing X versus Y? I mean, I'm sure you get these questions all the time.
Yeah, I mean, my philosophy is, you know, what are sports for? You know, and I think it's, you know, I'm a parent as well. And, you know, I think it's a positive impact on growth and development. You learn so much from sports. And so, you know, most athletes are not going to play in the NFL. You know, most athletes aren't even going to be Division I scholarship, you know, athletes. I mean, that's like the outliers. And so, you know, I think as they're in high school, you know, to maximize their enjoyment and what they're doing in sports is really important. You know, and then, you know, sometimes when you specialize where you're overdoing, you know, training in one direction, and usually what happens is, you know, at that youth setting, you know, you don't have coordination of their skill development, their strength development, their nutrition, you know, athletic training service like what you have in college. And so it can get very, you know, off base and overly heavy in one area that leads to injuries. So, you know, one piece of advice I would have is to make sure that as a parent, you're putting the right pieces in place, you know, in terms of their development. You're giving them time to rest. You're giving them time to, you know, to train and work on their body's ability to handle the workload, just so they don't break down. You know, like sport like baseball, you know, how many kids get their elbows wrecked because they get pitched so much they never get a chance to recover. And it's really important.
Right. I mean, I got to interview John McEnroe a little while back, and, you know, the tennis folk, they're always tennis. He's like, I tell parents all the time, kind of like, have your kids play other things. That's what I did, and it helped me. I mean, Jared, you ended up being in the NFL. You played a ton of soccer.
Yeah, but my dad told me after my sophomore year, he said, you got to start figuring out what you want to do. And I was just, I think every kid's different. You have to kind of figure it out. But for me, I need to be able to focus. So that was a big reason why I started just focusing and just playing one sport in high school. But I'm pushing my son to play everything under the sun. I want him to enjoy all that because sports is the greatest thing.
And Tom, I mean, you played for Northwestern. You were with Gary Barnett back in 1992 for a year. What did you do when you were coming through?
You know, I played, you know, baseball and soccer as a kid growing up. You know, eventually, you know, my dad and my brother convinced me to try football, you know, and they wanted me to try it before I got to high school. I'm like, no, I'm a soccer player. And, you know, and so I tried football and hated it the first day and then wound up, you know.
Sound like me.
but, you know, then pretty quickly it turned into really my favorite sport. You know, so in high school I played baseball and football. And then eventually I gave up baseball for track so I could train more for football. And I knew that football was going to be really where I would have a chance. And so, yeah, I was a multi-sport athlete, you know, and it, you know, it was kind of in the 80s. You know, training was very different back then. You know, our real emphasis as a company is speed development. We've seen tremendous gains there. You know, I was taught as a kid, you're just either fast or you're slow. You know, you train, you get big and strong, but you better have good parents, you know, and, you know, you can't really pick your parents, but if you could, you know, you'd want fast twitch, athletic parents, you know, which, you know, I probably had medium twitch parents, but I, you know, I love them and appreciate them.
Medium twitch. I like that.
I got to start working on my twitching.
I get a little better. Okay. I just turned 30. When does the, when am I start going down the downside of my life career?
About 5 years ago.
Okay. Great. Great. I am way behind in getting back in shape. So I better come out the TC Boost. And so my last question for you in regards to the draft, it's always fascinating to me how much detail goes into the research on every single prospect. And these teams, like, it's kind of creepy, actually, how much digging they do. But these are the decisions that get you hired and get you fired in a big right. business. What is your involvement in that? I mean, do you have scouts that pick your brain on the players that you're working with, or do you kind of stay out of that?
For the most part, I stay out of it. Okay. When I was the assistant strength coach at Northwestern, they would come through, and usually that's where they go. They'll go to the college, you know, strength and conditioning coaches and you know, football coaches, and talk to them. You know, I have some relationships with some scouts, you know, from the 15 years that we've spent, you know, training guys for the draft, and it's the same crew of scouts that come through Northwestern every year, you know, and so I've seen these guys for a long time, and you know, see them once a year. But so a few of them, you know, may reach out to me, but for the most part, you know, I'm not involved in that process.
Okay, makes sense. Again, it's tcboost.com. That's where you go to find more information on the gym, and it looks really cool. I think we're going to come out and check it out.
We'd love to have you guys.
We got to do that. I'm looking forward to that. I need more training in my life, really in all aspects of my life, but specifically on the physical side.
I'm good.
Are you scared?
Don't be scared, Carl.
No, I just said I'm good. I'm in perfect physical condition over here. But I'll come and show off, Tommy.
That'd be great.
Thanks so much for coming in, Tommy.
Thanks for having me.
Really
appreciate it.
Again, tcboost.com. We'll be right back here on The Beat.
I was downtown yesterday around WGN. I stopped by, get a little lunch at Whole Foods. I buy like an upper level little bag of nuts to take to the Cub game. You know, I'm waiting in the line. These nuts are staring at me. So I'm like, okay, I'm going in. I'm standing on the L. Woman right next to me is just completely staring at the bag.
She wanted the nuts?
She really wanted the nuts.
Oh, a lot of fun yesterday at Howls and Hood.
JP, she was all over my nuts. I mean, it was unbelievable. She reached into the bag on the L, full hand, grabbed every single one of them, and took one of them to sample.
What kind of nuts were they?
And by the way, Dan Long, I noticed the music selection along with that, too.
I missed that musical selection.
Well,
what was that?
It's James Brown, actually, but I just so happened to have an appropriate cut that I could have used to mix in there.
Yeah, it just had a nice...
nice little...
jingle to it for a certain...
I thought there was a underlying...
Well...
lyrical situation, perhaps.
I mean...
On 720 WGN The Beat. We can't be professional all the time. That would be way too much of... That'd be asking way too much.
Let's be honest. We're professional about 5% of the time.
Hold on. Just go back real quick. She reached into the bag.
She did.
Yeah, and grabbed the nuts that were in there.
It was not good nut etiquette, that's for sure.
She was staring at this bag of nuts, and I wanted to be a nice guy and said, would you like to try some? I figured she would say no. She said, yes, I'd like to try that. I love nuts. And I said, okay. So I hadn't even opened the bag. I had to go with the fresh seal unlock of the upper level bag of nuts that I bought at Whole Foods, and normally when you go into someone's bag of nuts or a bag of anything, you just kind of, you know, like one little finger or two in there,
or you hold your hand out and you
that's
wait
what
for
I
them.
Said
yeah you hold your hand yeah. out
you
I
let mean, them pour the nuts into your hand
and then it's perfect. And what kind were they?
It was like a candied almond cranberry $5 Whole Foods bag of nuts that had like 7 nuts in there, you know. Whole Foods, whole paycheck. But it was delicious. I love Whole Foods. I feel even when I go there and I eat mac and cheese and some other meat product, I feel like I'm losing weight, even though it's not necessarily.
You're talking about food a lot today.
It's been a bad day. But so she went all in, and she felt poor
nut etiquette. It was all I gotta say.
And it was, and like on the L too. I mean, I'm much more comfortable on public transportation than I am in my own car. That's where I feel my people reside. But that doesn't mean that I want to share my whole bag of food with you on the
L. Was she cute?
No.
All right.
I mean, terrible, but, you know, not. Okay.
If she was cute, if she was pretty hot, would it change? Would it change your view on giving her some of those nuts in the bag?
I'd like to think in my newfound way that I'm viewing life that you have nothing to lose at any moment. I think that I would have gone into a. Since you're so into nuts and I love nuts, maybe we can all get together and, you know, have a coffee or have a drink one day and discuss our love of these fine protein objects. And then you never know what happens. I mean, I'm a single man. I gotta be recruiting right now, right?
That is one way to do it,
especially on the L. I mean, that's a must.
You never know where you meet. I mean, where'd you all meet your wives?
In my apartment in Madison, Wisconsin.
How'd you get her in your apartment?
She was dating one of my roommates.
Oh, that's outstanding. Thank you for sharing honestly. So you...
That's why we didn't start dating for 2 years later.
Oh, okay. So she dated
There was a considerable amount of time that had passed.
Oh, this is a good moment in Beat history right now. We just learned that Adam Hoge stole his wife from his college roommate.
That's cool. Yeah.
We're still friends.
Are you really?
Oh, yeah.
It
wasn't like I stole. It's not like they were dating.
Did you
at the time of the steal?
Did you ask before you started dating 2 years later? If it, like, say, hey, me and Krista, I'll just throw a name out there. I think that's legal at this point.
It is.
We I think we have a little bit of a connection.
I asked before we actually like started getting serious. Mm-hmm. Hey, man, are you really okay with this?
Okay.
But I think at that point it had already been established that there was a thing going on.
Serious, or just serious? I think serious is what I'm hearing.
I think we're pretty serious. We are married now for 3 years.
I'm saying back in the day, was it serious, or was it serious? Like, did you have a serious, but then you're like, before we get real serious, now I'm going to ask.
I don't know what that means anymore. I'm lost.
I know, Jerry.
You got too deep for me.
I know JP's feeling me. What? Tell me your dating history right now.
Dating history. met my wife down on... where was it? Division and like, where was the place was called? Bella Lounge was the name of the place. And I was there, met her that night, and we ended up going to have food later that night at like early in the morning. We're eating just chicken fingers and french fries. Can't think of the place now.
Trish is listening right now. She's going to be very upset.
Somewhere.
Somewhere.
But it was awesome. Great time.
It's funny how that happens. We were talking before the show about how Chris and I ate topper sticks at 4 in the morning that first night. It all started with food in early hours in the morning.
That's how it happened.
What's a topper stick?
It's a place. It's a pizza joint up in Wisconsin.
Okay. So good.
The topper sticks are amazing. The topper sticks are like cheese. It's basically cheese bread.
Yeah, it's cheese bread. My wife's from Wisconsin. Come on, man.
Okay. My bad.
Cheese curds.
Obviously, to get with the program here, Mark, you need to find somebody from Wisconsin. You're looking in the wrong place.
You are looking in the wrong place for a woman.
You need to go spend a weekend up in Madtown.
How do either of you know exactly where I'm looking out of curiosity?
Well, I'm pretty sure you're not looking up in Wisconsin.
No.
I listen. I'm pro Wisconsin all day. Those are more. I can relate to a nice Wisconsin woman.
All I want you to do is find somebody.
Yeah.
So when this is all said and done, I just want to be in your wedding party because I think I've earned that as being on the radio with you for over a year now.
Listen, you're gonna have your own wing at my wedding when we get there. That's how we're gonna roll. And. I mean, I went out of state in my last situation that is no longer my situation, but that was a Kansas City. Out of town went Royals, went Chiefs, went Jayhawks. That lasted 4 years. Before that, as I go through my dating history, I know this is super interesting to everybody.
Absolutely. Well, it is to me.
Before that, I had local Chicago. Not a diehard sports fan. That was a bad idea from the start. And then before that was... Michigan, right out of what's the beautiful beach town in Michigan?
There's like
a thousand
of them.
Not New Buffalo,
South Haven.
South Haven.
Okay.
South Haven.
Wow.
So I literally
just threw one out there. That
well, I was going right down the middle.
Okay.
I wasn't going anywhere crazy, so I knew you could hit it. South Haven. So, and she, you know, she's in Florida now, married with two kids.
I mean, if there's anybody out there right now that just finds this guy, the Carm, at the Carm on Twitter, just interesting, give us a call.
By the way,
we'd love to have you.
Great advice from Brian on the text line. Said, Jared, you should have answered that question by saying, my wife's beauty has made me forget the first date, for I was just mesmerized by her.
That is true.
Good way in,
I will remember where we ate before the show's over.
So,
I promise.
So the tease, by the way, for this segment was that the White Sox have won another game. Adam Hoge has rudely not talked about his favorite baseball team, who the White Sox, I mean, get up, White Sox. Come on. Cubs are tied 3-3.
There was a nice crowd there today, too, on a beautiful Sunday, Mother's Day.
I have the attendance in front of me right here. How many people do you think were in the park?
Just from the glance, I'm going to say it was 25,000.
You had a 23,801, 58.6% full.
I mean, I'd like to see that number creep up more towards 30, and it will. It's still early May.
If they keep doing what they're doing now, it's definitely going to jump up.
Jose Quintana, 7 innings, 6 hits, 1 run. It was earned, 1 walk, 5 strikeouts, 104 pitches. ERA lowers to 1.38, so he's 5-1. Chris Sale is 7-0, and they won another game that Quintana started, so they're 13-1 when their top two starters are on the mound. Incredibly impressive. And Todd Frazier, still over 4 again, even though he had a hit yesterday, hitting .194, room for improvement. That's why I'm bringing it up. You've got Jose Abreu's hitting .252. Jimmy Rollins probably going to stay down around .230. But the point is that they're in first place, playing great baseball, 22-10, and they're pitching great, but their offense can do more, right?
Yeah, I mean, I still think the offense can get better. I think they need to add another bat. Avi Garcia, all of a sudden, in his last 9 games, his numbers are off the charts. And that's a good sign, because right now that's what they need. When I say that they need another bat, it's either Avi starts hitting or they need to go trade for somebody. So it's very encouraging to see him get on track. But really, I think the story is just the continued defense.
Thank you.
Do you know the last time, when their last error was? The last time the White Sox committed an error. I heard this on the broadcast today from Steve Stone. It was last Saturday, over a week ago. They just went a whole week without an error.
Well, Todd Frazier's been huge at third.
I didn't know he was that good defensively.
Yeah.
Did you?
Yeah, I kind of did, because I watched him a lot with the Reds,
yeah,
the National League guy.
I knew he was a great player. I didn't know he was he's like an elite defensive third baseman.
There's a nice balance going on. And just imagine if you do add a bat anytime soon, and then also that offense starts to get crazy hot. Then you have a really, really nice balance. But right now, man, defensively, and Hoge, we talked about this when you came on to Sports Feed last week. I mean, this team last year to where they are defensively is so much better.
312-981-7200. I want to know, really, from White Sox fans, are you at the point where you're buying in? What do you think they still need to add? I realize it's still May, but does this team feel like it's complete? I think when you look at the Cubs, you kind of say, all right, this is actually the best team in baseball. I think with the White Sox, there's still a little bit of skepticism.
People are actually saying the Cubs are the best team ever, not just the best team in baseball.
I'm sorry.
But you can keep it.
You were 20 minutes ago, you were crying because they were losing 3-1
know,
in the game
I,
that Arrieta started.
Hold on. Wasn't
and
that,
I, what did I tell you? I said, dude, it's the sixth inning.
There's
plenty of time.
And now
it's tied already because Chris Bryant came up to bat.
It's really because Trevor Cahill's the greatest relief pitcher since this guy jumped on the roster last year, they literally haven't lost a game except for to the Mets, don't put it all on Cahill when you get swept. I'm going to give you my favorite White Sox stat coming back right after the timeout.
Okay. I'm excited.
It's a significant stat that's very basic all at the same time. You okay. Feeling me?
Yeah,
I'm feeling you.
This is the beat.
This is the beat, 720 WGN.
All right, Mark Carmen has a crazy White Sox stat that he wants to give us. Real quick, this is just tweeted from Chris Campa over at Comcast, the best stats guy in this entire town. Are you aware that Bryce Harper has walked 11 times in the series against the Cubs?
Yes, I am aware of that. They've been pitching around.
I'm not aware of that.
11 walks, 2 intentional, 1 hit by pitch, 1 sack fly. two strikeouts, three runs, one RBI. They're not letting him touch the ball, and yet he's still having a very effective series.
He is,
although
but
they haven't won a game.
Again.
You gotten the stat yet?
No, I got my stat.
Well, all right, what's the stat?
Well, okay. I mean, there's a lot of stats with the White Sox right now. I mean, they're 6-0 against the Twins this year. Last year, they beat the Twins six times. They lost 13 games. So, but that's not my stat.
But that's important because that beating their own division has been a problem for this ball club in recent years. And if the Twins are clearly one of the worst teams in baseball, and you need to beat them.
Yeah, and you know I mentioned Sale and Quintana being 13-1. I left out Matt Latos. They're 19-1 in games where Sale, Quintana, and Latos starts. That's not my stat though. 19-1 though.
And they have 22
that's just phenomenal.
Wins now?
They have 22 wins. They're 22-10, which we're getting to in a second. And my other stat is not the – they have a plus 37 run differential, which is a big number in this town, in the 7th, 8th, and 9th innings. In the 7th, 8th, and 9th, when the money's on the line, the White Sox are coming huge.
They've been doing their damage there.
But that is not my stat. You know what my stat is, the most basic stat of all?
What?
Their record.
That's correct. This White Sox, not their record.
You're on point today, Hogue.
It's not just the record.
South Haven.
The Chicago Cubs, the best team ever, are 7.5 games up on the Pittsburgh Pirates. The Chicago White Sox right now are 5 games up. They're 5 up on the Indians. They're 6 up on the Royals. They're 7 up on the Tigers, and they're 13.5 up on the Twins. I think it's underrated how much separation they already have.
It's important.
I mean, the Red Sox are 1 game back in the American League East. The Rangers are 0.5 game back in the West. The Mets are 0.5 game back in the NL East. The Pirates are the farthest back at 7.5, and then the Dodgers are 0.5 game back of the Giants. The White Sox have the second biggest lead in all of baseball, along with the Cubs. Hashtag Cubs Sox World Series 2016.
Can you imagine that? This town would go crazy.
I mean, it's way early. I get that. But if both teams are not in the playoffs, there's a collapse. It's a minor one. I'm sure that the White Sox are going to have a 5-game losing streak coming up at some point, and the Cubs will have one too. But you're 5 up. I mean, that's not nothing.
Well, here we're starting to get into an interesting conversation because a lot of Sox fans in this town have asked for Robin Ventura to be let go.
Not anymore.
In the past. Well, not only is that not the case anymore.
It's amazing.
But I believe there was
so fickle.
I saw a Sun-Times story today. I think Rick Tellender wrote it about giving him an extension. Because remember, he's not under contract. So here's my question to you right now. Would you give him an extension or wait till the end of the year? Remember, it was 2012 when they were in first place for most of the season and blew it in September.
I'm all for giving time.
Me too.
I'm all for giving time and letting things play out. I think you have to, don't you? It's already such a touchy subject when you bring his name up and you brought up before the season started to now to see how the White Sox started. And that was kind of my biggest thing with everything that went on with the LaRoche situation. I was like, it's going to be hit or miss. It seems either going to soar or they're going to just fall. It's going to be a disaster. And to see what's going on right now is just, it's pretty amazing on the South side.
And Robin clearly, in my mind, has to prove it. He's...
I like Robin.
I
like him too. I've always liked him personally. It just... I think this is a good lesson that it's a lot easier to manage a better ball club than it is
a
bad ball club.
It is.
But there still were things that you could go back and point to, specifically manager situations. And when 3 years go by and you're still playing that poorly, you start to – I think it's fair to wonder about a culture inside that locker room. But obviously a lot of it had to do with the players because they made some key acquisitions this year, and it's like the whole thing flipped.
You need that though. You have to. If you don't have any type of base, then, and especially if you bring in guys that actually are key guys that are key contributors, it helps out a lot. I mean, to me, that's a big deal.
Well, it was a huge moment Friday night when Jose Abreu gets hit, and then the bench is clear, and both teams are warned, and Robin didn't like it, and he goes out there and argues, gets kicked out of the game. White Sox fans, and I'm sure plenty of the people there were chanting, Robin, plenty of those people were chanting a year ago, fire him.
Yeah.
But they were going nuts. They loved seeing, I mean, nothing thrills a franchise more or a fan base more when you go out there and get in a toddy-toddy with good old Blue.
And hey, look, they played so poorly those last few seasons. I mean, bad baseball, bad base running, bad defense, that I don't think you can really blame fans for wanting to call for the manager to be fired. But I think in what we're learning, and we'll see, it's, I hate saying it's still early, but I mean, it's still early May. Let's see this thing play out a little bit. But what we could be witnessing here is, for once in sports, and it doesn't happen a whole lot, and I've probably criticized this team for being a little bit too patient, maybe a lot too patient, but maybe it's paying off. Maybe their patience and loyalty to their guys over there on the south side is paying off in what could be a special season.
312-981-7200. You want to jump on, talk a little baseball. After the news, though, there was a disturbing story in sports again coming out of Pennsylvania. You probably know what we're talking about. 720 WGN.
Surprised you're listening to The Beat?
No, I'm not surprised at anything. I don't want to answer any questions like that.
Chicago sports spoken here. This is The Beat on 720 WGN.
720 WGN, White Sox winner 3-1. And the Cubs and Nationals still going on. Jake Arrieta out of the ballgame. He'll get a no decision today. 3-3.
Aw, no decision.
No problem. No decision's cool. I'm good. Jake's good. We're all good. I walked in the clubhouse early today, right? He's getting ready for his start. He's got his hat on backwards. He's got his headphones on. He's got the look is going straight ahead, completely in his own world. And I kind of thought to myself, are you the most intimidating man on earth? Because I would not want to, if he saw me walking 15 feet in front of him, I'd get out of the way. Like, I wouldn't even come closer to 14 feet. Okay, you're in your own zone, dude. Let me get out of here.
Certain guys like that, where you look at him, just even, you know, either in locker rooms where you're like, man, let me just stay away. You mess around and bump into somebody, hurt one of those guys, you're in trouble, man.
Right. That's just, and Jake's a very mild-mannered guy, you know, when he's not pitching. But Davis start about 2 hours beforehand, I was steering clear. That was my game plan.
That's always been my game plan with pitchers on the day. Right. Some are different. Some don't mind it. Some don't want you to talk to them at all.
So here,
personally, I'm a little frightened by Jake Arrieta when he's in game mode.
Yeah, I mean, completely. So we talked about before the break some news coming out of Pennsylvania, and of course we're talking about more Jerry Sandusky, Joe Paterno stuff. Apparently there's a 60-year-old gentleman coming forward now who talks about how he was abused by Jerry Sandusky as early as 1976, in that. Both Joe Paterno.
Well, the thing is he claims he told Joe Paterno.
Right.
That he went to Joe Paterno.
He was on a phone call with two people, one of whose name was Joe, and he obviously recognized the sound of his voice, and he was told, "Why are you trying to take down the university? Do not do this. We will send the police to your house," to basically, you know, blaming the victim. 1976. And the university, Penn State, to me, is incredible with their president's response to
it. This just came out today, right?
Yeah.
Penn State. First of all, before we get to that part of it, can we just rewind? I want to make sure the timeline is very
clear. Go ahead.
Very clear, because this is 1976. Do you know what year the Second Mile, which was the charity that started by Jerry Sandusky, in which he basically recruited these boys?
Well, after that, this guy at the time was, allegedly, let's make sure we get that in there, 15 years old, and Sandusky was 27 in 1976.
The charity was invented, or started, I should say, founded in 1977. So if these allegations are true, and really based on everything that's come out in this entire saga, by the way, this came from sworn testimony.
Yes, that's important.
There's an insurance trial going on right now in Pennsylvania that's basically deciding whether or not Penn State should have to pay out all this money to the victims, or if the insurance that they had, and big corporations and universities buying insurance for these types of scandals. But basically it's deciding who should be liable to pay out the money. And this came from the judge who, in his opinion, referenced, and he was giving out his opinion on this whole thing in court, and he referenced this alleged claim that in 1976, this kid told Joe Paterno what was going on with Jerry Sandusky, and not only did they didn't Joe Paterno do anything about it, he responded in the way that Mark Carmen just brought up.
Aggressively
blaming the victim and telling him to be quiet, and the next year the second mile gets created, and how many more victims end up being brutally treated by Jerry Sandusky when this all could have been stopped in 1976, if all this is true.
If all this is true, but it still makes my stomach turn, you know, because I had the opportunity to have Joe Paterno sit in my house and recruit me to go to Penn State, and to hear this stuff and for the man that I got to know during that process, and to hear all this stuff, it just makes me it makes my stomach turn, because it's if you know something's going on, and you're talking Carm, you're talking about he's making statements like, "Yo, we will send the cops to your house," and come on, man, the people's lives were being affected, and you could have stopped something, and you didn't. It's crazy.
And so the university, which, and I was kind of curious too, what would the response be from Penn State? So their president,
especially because the whole university has flipped over since all this has happened.
Right. I mean, I mean,
we're talking about all new people in positions of power.
Right. But they also want the statue back. They want, you know, there's a huge movement that Joe Paterno was completely wrong. There's a lot of Penn State fans feel that way.
Would you, if you were there, you would be able to make decisions? Statue go up?
No. Can't have it. Can't have it. You got to distance yourself. So President Eric Barron, that's the president of Penn State, he sent a letter out on Sunday to the university community saying that, quote, he was appalled by the rumor, innuendo, and rushed to judgment. And then he continues on, Coach Paterno is not alive to refute these rumors. His family has denied them. As he continues on, he said, some of the press reports, he said, should be difficult for any reasonable person to believe, which is pretty bold, in my opinion, to hear the president of the university taking such an aggressive stance, you know, shooting down what Adam just mentioned. There's sworn testimony here.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, he says none of these allegations about the supposed knowledge of university employees has been substantiated in a court of law or in any other process to test their veracity. Okay. So this gets back to what the defense always is from the Paterno family and other people that are just in denial about this whole thing. And it is, well, it's not proven in court. Joe Paterno was never in court, never proven in court. And it gets back to the court of law, and not just the court of public opinion, but really what I've always said throughout this entire thing over the last few years is just your moral obligation. So did Joe Paterno really break the law or not? Like, that's where you get differing opinions from, and especially the people in Pennsylvania saying, oh, well, he never broke the law. You can't prove that he broke the law by not reporting it. He did report it to his superiors, and they're the ones that didn't do anything about it. But we all know that Joe Paterno was the man in charge. He's Joe Paterno. He's running that joint.
In Happy Valley, he was king.
Exactly. Well, and I think that's sort of the problem here. Without literally being the king, he was as close to a king as you could be in America.
I mean, I had a lot of different coaches come in and out of my house from college. When you went to Happy Valley, he was king.
What was your impression?
Impression first off in the house. I mean, first of all, it was a surreal moment because he's at my house. My dad was sick at the time, and my dad didn't want to meet and talk to any coaches, but him and Joe Pa sat and talked for over 2.5 hours about football and stories back in the 50s to 60s. That was the moment where I found out how much my dad truly loved football. Listened to their conversation, and I just sat there for 2 hours like, wow. First impressions were I thought he was a good guy.
Right.
So
that's incredibly cool that 34 was willing to I mean, sick, I mean, at that point.
Sick. And they sat and talked football, and I'm sitting there going, aren't you guys supposed to be recruiting me? But I guess I'll just sit here and not say anything. Listen to your stories.
Well, that's an awesome memory, though, man. I'm sure to look back, your dad sitting there talking to Joe Paterno, who nothing, obviously now it's a little bit, you know, a little, I'm sure, has a different
nothing
feel
went
to
on
it.
There without him knowing what was going on.
Right.
I it's hard to believe.
And people are texting in, hey, if he was 15 in 1976, how can he be 60 now? Yeah, okay. I should have said close to 60. By that math, he's 55 now. Okay. I mean, let's not get caught.
Well, I think there's been two different claims here this week. It goes back to all along, if Joe Paterno had any knowledge whatsoever and did nothing about it, it's not even just the fact that he was in charge for the football program for all those years. And quite frankly, the one thing I never agreed with was them taking the victories away from Penn State. I don't really know what that has to do with.
And none of that matters. Nobody's looking
right.
at
it. But that was always weird to me. Again, it's the moral obligation. If he wanted to squash it, he could have squashed it, and he didn't. And what really matters now, and here's why this does matter. I mean, it's already been proven, not in the court of law, but in the grand jury report, there's damning testimony that really cannot be refuted as to his knowledge of in 1998. Okay? And so that's where you look at, okay, who was a victim after 1998, and how much does that fall on the conscience of Joe Paterno, right? And now we find out 1976, 22 years earlier?
Yeah, and
the whole thing could have been shut down.
And I clearly get that his family wants all the conversation to be over and done with, and they've been through enough, right, in their minds. I get that they want it to be over, but I'm sorry. The collateral damage, if more stuff keeps on coming out, that's just part of the deal of that. That's this is what happened. And, you know, however that resonates through from, you know, his kids and the whole deal. I mean, that sucks, but I think it's fair game of when stories come out like this. You can't just sweep it under the rug. You know, that's like they're blaming the media. That's not, I don't think that's fair at all.
So, and a texter points out too that, I mean, Jerry Sandusky was fostering and adopting some of these kids as his own.
It's the most vile story that college sports has ever had. By a mile.
Remember when it hit, like when everything dropped,
it's to this day, and I have a feeling it might remain the biggest bombshell that I've ever.
It was huge.
I guess the only thing that we compare, maybe, and maybe other people that are older than me can chime in on this, but the O.J. Simpson story is probably a bigger deal at the time when it first happened. But I mean, this is right up there. Right.
It has to be.
312-981-7200 if you want to jump in, and we'll lighten it up coming up after 5 o'clock as well. This is 720 WGN.
The inbounds pass comes into Jordan. Here's Michael at the foul line. A shot on Elo. Good! The Bulls win it! They win it! Set the Cleveland Cavaliers. Michael Jordan hits it at the foul line. 101-100.
The great Jim Durham on the call, RIP. Johnny Redker, the great Johnny Redker, RIP. That anniversary of the greatest shot ever made in the history of the NBA was yesterday, May 7th, 1989. I'm Mark Harmon, you're Adam Hogue, you're Jared Payton. I need a hug. That was so much fun. Can I go back and do that again? Sunday afternoon,
no.
4:51 p.m. Do you have the poster up? The freeze frame of it?
No.
No.
You didn't have that laminated on your wall?
No.
No.
What kind of people are you?
Normal.
Yeah.
I mean, I stared at that thing just... I mean, look at where Elo is right
it's
there.
It's still hanging on your wall, isn't it?
It's not, but it should be. look at where Larry Nance is just staring out at him. Look at Doug Collins. That was... I think that might have to start becoming officially my favorite day of the year every year, May 7th, just for the memories. That was the start of it all, man. When Jordan hit the shot, and then they made the run to the Eastern Conference Finals. Can we talk? You want? Can we talk, Mike? All for the rest of the show.
You don't. If, yeah. you, if you could do a weekly Michael Jordan show, you would do it.
I would. Like, I'd rather at this
There's
point.
Nothing wrong with that though. It's Mike.
At this point in Bulls talent, I'd rather rewatch like the 86-87 Bulls than what's going to be the Bulls this year. There was stuff out of the Bulls actually today. Jimmy Butler, from a piece by Casey Johnson, that he was not thrilled about Gar Foreman saying that, hey, you know, we're going to evaluate everyone. I mean, Jimmy wants to be not on the, you know.
Yeah, I'm just like so beyond annoyed by Jimmy Butler.
you're in that Jimmy Butler camp.
Well, it just
I don't know where I
shut
fall.
Up and play.
I just
does
have
he have a right to be upset about that?
No, I don't think he does. And I don't know. I get it. Everybody, you look at the situation, and I get it. I'm glad he got his money, but I still have a feeling when you look at guys and you hear stuff come out of that locker room, he wants to be a leader so bad. But not everybody's built to be a leader, man. Not everybody is built to lead. You can't force it.
It's a natural thing.
And you're trying to do it with grown men. Not like this is not high school or college. These are professional athletes making millions of dollars. And if you're faking it, they know. And you have to come correct. If you don't, the situation like you see right now, and I love Jimmy to death, he's not that guy that's going to win you a championship. He's a piece to a puzzle.
Well, what was interesting in Casey's piece, if you missed in the Tribune today, as far as leadership goes, you know, Joakim Noah has been the leader of the Bulls for nearly a decade.
Yeah.
So Jimmy, you know, talked about how we need more leadership. Well, that didn't sit well with Joakim.
It shouldn't.
And Joakim's the most popular guy in that locker room. So part of being a leader is to sort of understand the dynamics of where you're at, right?
Yes.
I mean, if you can't figure out, you know, leadership 101 as far as, you know, you start talking like that, it's not going to sit well with Joakim Noah, who's still here. I mean, if Noah was gone, which he may be.
Is he coming back?
John Paxson was pretty clear on that ending press conference that they want to have Joakim back. Now, I mean, I think if he gets a huge offer from somebody, Joakim probably ends up playing for whatever that team may be.
The Cleveland Cavaliers.
That ain't happening. Him and LeBron. I think LeBron's getting the okay, which Cleveland is playing right now. What do we got over there? They're up one?
98-97.
With how much time left?
A
little bit over a minute.
Right, trying to sweep out Atlanta. So that would be eight straight.
They're dangerous right now.
They're big time dangerous.
Hey,
It also, Casey also added in there that the Bulls are going to look heavily at drafting a point guard at 14 overall. They've got a 1.8% chance to get in that top three, and then you could get a really good player. There's the Simmons kid out of LSU.
I like Ben Simmons.
And then there's the Dookie, long 6'9". Can't believe his name. Just I've done like massive research on him, and my mind's going.
It's all right. I mean,
Brandon Ingram,
yes.
Oof.
So those are your top two, and then there's Buddy Hield, there's Chris Dunn. I mean, there's a lot of good guards. So
I like a Buddy Hield.
Ingram's still kind of – he's got to fill out a little bit more.
Yeah, the NBA draft camp is coming up in town, too, later this week. I know you guys are coming out there and join me.
Can't wait.
We'll be there.
See, those are my guys. But, yes, if you're a Bulls fan and you've been starved for some news, Casey's got a good piece today. 312-981-7200. Cubs and Nats are 3-3 top of 10. So when that goes final, we'll do a little Cubs post at some point in the 5 o'clock hour. But if not, I've got some just evergreen sort of baseball stuff.
There's something incredible that happened in baseball yesterday.
Oh, that's true.
That we have to get to because it was just phenomenal.
You know, I got to leave to go do TV. Come on, man. I got to at least talk some Bears. You guys cut me off.
We did. We should come back to the Bears.
Are you hanging for the first segment after 5?
Yeah, but I got to go pretty soon, man.
Okay,
Sports feed.
We'll do it right after. We'll right after 5 o'clock news with you. NFL Draft, 720 WGN.
Why? Chicago sports spoken here.
What in the sports is going on here?
This is The Beat.
5 o'clock hour, 720 WGN. He's Adam Hoge. He's Jared Payton. I'm Mark Harmon. One more hour of scintillating sports talk coming to you. Cubs and the Nats, 3-3, bottom 10. David Ross nearly just won the game, but corralled on the warning track. Cubs have not a big bench. They're going to have to use some of their pitchers. Jason Hamill is actually on deck if it gets that far. We'll keep you up to date. Anything happens, you don't need the play-by-play. We're right here for you, and we'll let you know what's going on. Now, Jared Payton's got to talk football because it's...
I got to go.
Okay, bye.
No, I don't want to leave. That's why.
No, Jared has to go do TV, but we did want to give you a chance to give us your thoughts on the Bears draft class.
What were you most happy about? Start there.
Most happy, I really like Jordan Howard. I like adding another running back. I thought the Bears would. I didn't know when they would get another running back, but I love the fact of when you start to see what, you know, with Cody Whitehair, if he can be the guy that the Bears think he's going to be, you start to see that this offense is going to be just a little bit different, and I'm hoping, especially in the running game. But Leonard Floyd, I mean, there's question marks. There's a lot of optimism of what this guy can be. And the one thing, Hoge and Carm, you both know, is you can't teach speed. That's one of the things that he has, his get-off. Can he be a guy that can be on that edge, and how they use him and the plan that they have for him? Can he be successful? If he can, you know, especially in this division, if you can get to Aaron Rodgers, you have a good shot of beating the Packers. And right now the Packers are sitting on top of still of this division.
And we had Tommy Christian in earlier. Remember, he was talking about twitchiness, and we were having some fun with that. But not only does Leonard Floyd have the speed rush to his game, he has that fast twitch off the line of scrimmage, and that's so important to have. So I'm optimistic, too. I liked him. He wasn't the top guy left on my big board when the Bears traded up to get him, but I do think he was definitely going to go to New York and the Giants at the 10th pick. So that was their guy. And I think it's still early in this regime, but Ryan Pace, John Fox, more reasons to trust them now than doubt them. And so you like the conviction. You like that they got the guy they wanted. And we'll see how it plays out.
Hogan and I both gave grades at B-minuses, so I mean that's pretty good. You got to see how the class is going to shape out. I am happy though, Carm, that they do have another Miami guy. A Miami guy leaves when Antrell roll and they get Deion Bush.
Tell us about Deion Bush.
A guy that is a big hitter. He's going to come in and will try to dislodge the ball, dislodge your helmet from your head. I mean, that's how hard he tries to hit. It scares me a little bit. Can he stay healthy and play that way? We know, we've seen in the past of safeties that come in that try to be all world. But he does have speed. He's an athlete. He has some range. The Bears definitely are probably going to use him to be able to stop the run, come down. He's a guy that I truly, truly like. And I love the fact that you're getting more athletic. That's the thing I like about the draft. I'm seeing guys with a little bit more length, a little bit more speed, and I enjoy that.
A lot faster.
And if you get even Kwiatkowski, you go up and get a guy, you're talking about more inside linebackers, why you go get them, but you also look at the depth that they're building for special teams as well. Yeah. They have to. Special teams is – people forget about that phase of the game. It's been terrible for a while now. They got to get back to getting more athletes on special teams because you have to be able to win that phase as well.
I want to rewind back to Leonard Floyd, who Glenn Kozlowski watched Georgia play, said he didn't even notice him on the field. And if there's one thing Koz is good at is when he's watching a football game, being able to tell.
Did he say which game he watched, though?
He watched three games. Watched him three times. Didn't even notice the guy. And you're talking about underweight, different dude. To me, it's a reach. I don't know. You're asking an awful lot. I mean, to me, it's like they're almost trying to prove themselves to be the smartest guy in the room, which is a dangerous proposition. Maybe they'll be right, but they don't need a third down rushing specialist in the first round, right? I mean, we can all agree about that, and he very well could be that.
Well, as a rookie, at least early in his rookie year, I mean, I'm not sold on the fact that he's going to be starting week one. I think he's going to be put out there in special situations. But
that's
not the end goal. I mean, for him to live up to being the number nine overall pick, he needs to turn into a reliable starter and a very one of the top defensive players in the league at that spot. Like, that's what you're aiming for with that pick.
Right.
What's possible?
It's possible. There are question marks, though. So
no one knows what he's going to do when he puts the weight on.
And how much does the speed go away?
Can you point to anybody who put weight on, didn't lose speed, and was effective?
I mean, I don't have an example off the top of my head of somebody who played at 6'6", 230 in college.
Right.
He has a very weird...
It's a weird frame.
Rare frame for that position. There's no question. Also, but here's what's encouraging. He weighed in at the combine at 244, so he put on about 15 pounds at least. Some say he was at 225, so 15, 20 pounds before the combine. And the three drills he participated in, he was a top five performer in all three of them with the added weight, and that includes the 40-yard dash. So there is evidence here that he has already put on the weight and kept the speed where it's at. We just don't know on the football field how that translates.
Right.
But based on his combine numbers, he added the weight. He wants to add about 5 to 10 pounds more before the season, and then we'll see what speed he's at from a football standpoint. But, I mean, if he's running at that speed, let me bring it up. I forget. Was he 4.47, I want to say?
I think so. I do have a question, though. I got to ask, because did you – I looked at your mock draft, and at one point you had the Bears taking a quarterback. Were you surprised that they didn't take a quarterback in this draft?
I wasn't completely – I thought they would, but I wasn't completely surprised because if Ryan Pace is truly drafting best player available, then you don't have the mentality of I absolutely have to come out of this draft with a QB. Now, I think if it played out a certain way where – maybe Connor Cook was still on the board when they're mm-hmm. in the fourth round. There was one report that said they tried to trade up and get him. So I think that's just a result of how the draft played out. I don't think they came into the draft saying, oh, we're definitely drafting one. And I don't think they came into the draft saying we're definitely not drafting one. I believe they had quarterbacks who they evaluated closely on their board. And the board just didn't fall that way for when their picks came out. They also knew they had Brian Hoyer in the back pocket.
Yeah.
That seemed pretty obvious. And as soon as the draft was over, Brian Hoyer signs with the Bears, and he's going to be more ready to go as the backup next year than any of these rookies would have been.
You got
to
have a guy like that. I mean, if you don't, especially we've seen it before where your starting quarterback goes down, if you don't have a backup, a reliable backup or a guy with some experience, man, especially if you're on a roll, anything can happen. But I think the Bears and Ryan Pace did put, you know, this division, the NFC North, on watch. Like, listen, we're making some great moves. We'll figure it out. We got to see how they all play out, but – We're heading in the right direction.
Yeah, it's going to be tough with the Packers and the Vikings.
Yeah.
Two very good teams. I think the Lions have fallen off, though. But Bears with their schedule, it's not as easy as it looked like it was going to be, but it's still favorable.
Yeah.
You win your home games. I think they have an outside shot of getting in as a wild card this year.
We did the schedule with Hampo being Kaz, and they got him at 11-5, which is a little... slightly optimistic, perhaps, but hey, that's and that included basically winning, I think, every game after the bye week, because the schedule does get considerably easier in the second half of the season on paper right now. So 11-5, which I don't think their over under is going to be 10.5. Call me crazy. I'm going to say it'll be what, 7-5?
I got 10.
7.5. What is it? Is it out?
7.5.
Is it at 7.5?
I think it's somewhere right. Yeah.
I mean, that's where it's right. I mean, this is a 500 team all day.
We'll see what happens. I got confidence in this
team. What do you got coming up on TV tonight?
Tonight, just talking some baseball with Josh, and we'll be talking a little basketball as well, a little Jimmy talk. But we definitely got to talk about the Northsiders and the Southsiders.
Baseball in Chicago right now, it's great.
Before you go, Jared, you should know that this week, Brittany, I think you might know her, and Elliot, bring out the bagels, sourdough bread, and cookies. In an all-new episode of Best Sandwiches.
That was your breakfast today, right?
Yes.
Add a donut in there.
And some French toast?
I had French toast.
I made French toast this morning. Not for Carm.
I made eggs at home.
For my wife and her family.
Made eggs at home.
My family.
Had eggs at Wrigley Field. And French toast.
Is that why you really went to Wrigley to get the breakfast?
I did. I wanted to have...
You really did?
I spent Mother's Day with Rick Morrissey and Seth Gruen. That was my Mother's Day. I don't know what you guys did. But that we all had breakfast. Chicago's Best, Sunday night at 10 on WGN-TV. Jared, have a great show.
Love you guys.
Adam, I got a beautiful evergreen moment in time for you coming back here.
All right. I'm sorry you're stuck with me for another 45 minutes.
720 WGN.
Back here on the beat, Adam Hogan, Mark Carman still with you here till 6 o'clock. Cubs and Nationals still in overtime. Extra innings out at Wrigley. We'll get you updated when we have a final. Elsewhere in baseball, though, your Chicago White Sox still in first place, but there was something that happened last night in San Diego.
First place White Sox fans, we want to hear from you. 312-981-7200.
We do. We know you're out there because I saw the attendance today.
I'm not 100% certain you're out there, but I think you're out there. Could be out there.
They're out there.
Yesterday, you guys proved that you were out there.
Yes. You said, do you even want us to talk about the White Sox? And we got text calls flooded in and said, yes, Mark Carman, we are out there.
Prove it. I want to get a substantial proof. Tell me what you liked most about today's game. Love to hear from a Sox fan.
I like the win.
I
liked Austin Jackson's catch in the ninth inning.
I would settle for that. 312-981-7200.
I just like the overall defense more than anything. It has kept my blood pressure at a normal rate for most of the season. So I appreciate that from the Chicago White Sox.
I try not to troll for phone calls, but just sometimes it happens. And right now I'm fully trolling for a White Sox call just to hear the love on the South side. So I like to hear a Sox fan just come out there and just puff out the chest. We're five games up. Continue on with the best moment in baseball yesterday.
I never thought the White Sox would be five games up on May 8th. That's for sure. Okay, so last night in San Diego, Mets, Friars, greatest moment in baseball history. This is it.
Colon looking for his first hit of the year. Oh. He drives one deep left field. That goes up to it. Back near the wall. It's out of here. Bartolo has done it. The impossible has happened. His first career home run.
Bartolo Colon, the 42-year-old pitcher for the New York Mets, still going, big, sexy, still pitching in baseball, hits a bomb. What? I mean, it was a big-sized home run. It wasn't just like it squeaked over the fence at the corner. I mean, he jacked one.
Yeah, and Bartolo, he's had a little bit of the performance-enhancing in his history.
Yeah.
Maybe.
That was Gary Cohen and Keith Hernandez, correct?
That was the great Keith Hernandez.
And
I'm Keith Hernandez.
MASN or whatever that channel is.
PIX.
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 That's a new one.
It's a Tribune Media station, I think.
Oh, it's a great station. Love it.
Courtesy of PIX, Gary Cohen and Keith Hernandez, formerly of... New York Mets and Seinfeld on the call.
And Seinfeld. I like how you should credit him on Seinfeld. Hey, did you see what his teammates did, though?
I did not.
First of all, they're going nuts in the dugout, obviously, because Bartolo Colon hit a home run. But then they quickly ran down into the clubhouse. So the dugout was empty when he got back in
there. That's awesome. That's a good baseball tradition.
I love that baseball tradition. Usually reserved for rookies in their first home run. But Bartolo Colon, was that his first career home run?
Yes, that was his first ever home run. I think they said that on the call, and it most definitely was.
Oh, sorry, I wasn't listening.
You just set up the call. You wanted to play it, and then where did your mind go to while that was going on?
One career home. No, I was listening. Wait a minute. I was totally distracted. The visualization of Bartolo Colon running around the bases.
It's okay. Everybody that we're dealing with, as far as producer Dan Long, co-host Adam Hogue, this guy Mark Carman, anybody listening, we're the most distracted society of all time. I can't realistically expect you to lead into a cut, have it play for 10 seconds, and hear what's being said, because I know what I do. And it's a hard time being, people have a hard time being present nowadays, Adam.
Just in case you're wondering, here are Bartolo Colon's 19 years of... baseball batting statistics.
Tons of people are wondering this.
I think they are. One career home run. It came last night in San Diego.
How many doubles?
Two doubles.
Two dubs.
Two doubles.
Any trips?
Zero triples, which is really...
slob of
actually,
them.
If he ever got a triple, I'd actually be more impressed by that than the home run.
No questions. Complete slob of a man.
He of the 0.92 batting average, 0.99 on base percentage, and a nice, nice 114 slugging for a grand total OPS of 213. If you're a fan of the OPS plus, that is at a steady negative 42.
We'll see. I don't want to judge somebody unfairly, but I'm just going to guess by those numbers that Bartolo perhaps did not commit himself to being the best hitter that he could be. I think Bartolo might have been at the snack bar and not in the batting cages. Not that you want your pitchers spending a ton of time in the cages, but you would think there'd be some pride of performance. Like, look at John Lester on the north side. Couldn't hit when he got here. He's gotten a whole lot better, right? In his year whatever, year plus now, pride in performance, John Lester can always
still
do better.
Still can't throw to first, though.
That's a mental situation. Cubs and Nats, bottom 11 now, 3-3. Anything happens, we will keep you up to date.
How many people remember Bartolo Colon's two stints with the Chicago White Sox?
I remember at least one of them.
Well, even I forget that he was there twice.
Yeah, the second one, August pickup?
2009.
For the whole year?
It's just 12 games.
Yeah,
no.
Okay. That's what I remember.
And then he goes to New York, Oakland, and then ends up back in New York with the Mets. Just a crazy career. Bartolo Colon, the greatest.
Let it be known that I asked for phone calls from White Sox fans.
Oh, God.
Hasn't happened.
Jesus.
Looking at the text line, 312-981-7200. Hasn't happened. On my own personal phone, the McCanns spent Mom's Day at the Sox game. What we like best is the win and the winning. Adam Eaton's killing it, and we are supporting Quintana's pitching for the first time. Go Sox. And Brett Laurie's performance and feisty attitude. Austin Jackson catch. That was the bomb. Great Mom's Day with my husband and two sons.
Just a great day at the ballpark, I think. I wish I was there. I'm jealous.
I might have to take a screenshot and put this out on my Twitter that there are White Sox fans out there that are listening to this program and celebrating a victory today. And the fact that you're 22-10, 5 games up.
Incredible.
312-981-7200. You can build on that White Sox love.
Okay, when we come back, did you see what Dwayne Wade did last night that has the nation of Canada all upset?
I did, and we can most definitely talk about respecting a country.
Okay.
Or lack of respect.
We'll do that next. It's 720 WGN.
This is The Beat on 720 WGN and on demand at WGNradio.com.
All right, back here on The Beat. A couple more segments as we take you to 6 o'clock. My name is Adam Hogue. Mark Carmen here with me as well. It's been a fun weekend. A lot of fun yesterday with the derby party we had next door at Howells and Hood. Neither of us won very much money, but some of the other members of our station did.
Well, people that needed it more did. I mean, the Rokan show, they needed to pull off the superfecta, trifecta, exacta.
They hit them all.
Yep.
Any kind of bet you could have hit, they hit them all.
So that it was good for them. We didn't want to hog any of the dollars.
Kevin Powell celebrated 10 feet away from us, didn't explain to us what was going on, and then booed us. Later.
It's very rude.
Yeah.
Extremely rude. Kevin actually out at Cubs at Wrigley today. They are going to the 12th as Jason Hayward was thrown out at the plate in the bottom of the 11th. So if you're wondering about the Cubs, Arrieta long gone.
And Kevin, if you're listening, this is what you get. It's just karma coming right back at you.
I don't think
you
he's listening.
Sit at Wrigley for 7 hours.
I'm now officially rooting for this guy. I had so much Cubs stuff today that we were looking to get to that, which we'll have to...
We'll put it up online, WGNradio.com/sports.
It'll be up there and talk to a bunch of people about Mother's Day, the whole deal. Actually, we might get to a Joe Maddon one little piece here. But I'm now rooting for this game to just extend because I will leave here at 6 and go right back there for the celebration for postgame. I need like a 15 inning so I can be there.
So you're going to go back to Wrigley and get in the clubhouse?
Yeah.
For why?
Because I'm sick.
Why don't you just go home and enjoy your Sunday evening?
I want to be around. I think
basically been working nonstop since 1:20 on Friday.
Right.
I'm not sure you've slept.
I did after the show last night. I went to a little family thing, And then I'm like, I got to go. And it was over at 9 o'clock.
Okay.
Night, night.
That actually makes me feel better. I'm starting to get worried about you. Don't go back to Wrigley. Go home.
I love extra innings. It's a lot of fun. I mean, I'd be going for my old pure enjoyment. It's Sunday. It's going to be cold tomorrow. It's beautiful out right now. Just keep it rolling. Top of 12. No, we need to get to, you know, if we get to about the 14th, I could be back there by 6:30 or so. Oh, it's another 50 minutes of baseball.
Can I tell you what happened last night with Dwayne Wade?
Please.
I
have thoughts.
So, the game, you got the Toronto Raptors, Miami Heat. What's this series at, Mark Carmen, NBA guy?
2-1 Toronto.
2-1 Toronto. Toronto wins this game. The game's in Miami, game 3 last night, correct, or during the day? So, because Toronto obviously is a city in Canada.
Oh, Canada, yes.
They play both anthems.
As they should, yes.
Before the game. And they start with Oh Canada, and both teams are lined up at their respective free throw lines, looking up at the flag, very respectfully observing the celebration of Oh Canada. Except for one person. Dwayne Wade is still shooting at the basket, going through his warm-ups. And so I'm first like, okay, I got to see this video. Is there video? And there is. There's video of it. And he's just blatantly shooting.
Right, but
while the anthem's going on.
Right, the anthem's going on. His entire team is lined up at the free throw line. And Dwayne Wade, he wants to hit the last shot before he gets into the line. And he keeps missing. So it's
probably
getting
a superstition.
So it's getting later and later into the anthem. And D. Wade, rather than giving up, the very focused Dwayne Wade kept on shooting, which was wrong.
So today he addresses reporters. Because, by the way, I mean, all these Raptor fans, Canadians, were very upset about
as
this.
They
exploded on social media. Canadians were not happy, and I don't blame them.
You know what's
and
the
someone very astutely pointed out that if this was the opposite situation during the American anthem with, I mean, I guess you'd have to probably have a Canadian-born player.
Right. Well, depending on who gets in office, they might get deported.
Well, a lot of people would be upset if this was the other way around, and I don't blame them for being upset. So Dwayne Wade says, though, that the reason it happened was because the clock was different than it was in Toronto.
Oh.
The pregame clock. And he didn't realize that it was time for the anthem to start.
So D-Wade was going to get his warm-up no matter what. D-Wade.
So here's what he said. He goes, it's something that I do before every game that I prepare for, and I've been doing it my whole career. So I understand whatever is said from that standpoint, but I'm not a disrespectful person. So if anybody thinks I'm being disrespectful towards a country, then they have no idea of who Dwayne Wade is. Like how he goes third person there. Saturday, everything started a little later than it did when we were in Canada. It started at 12:30 on the clock. It was no disrespect for myself. And if anybody feels like it was, please don't fill up my timeline with disrespectful comments because that's not this guy right here. Find somebody else for that. But we'll adjust our pregame routine for the next game. So it wasn't Dwayne Wade's fault. It was the entire Miami Heat's pregame routine. Meanwhile, all the rest of his teammates are lined up where they should be observing the anthem. He's shooting. Come on, man.
Right. It speaks to a lot of folk nowadays who just don't want to take any accountability for their own actions.
No. Because I think what happened here is exactly what you said. He didn't. Maybe he's right in that he didn't realize the anthem was starting at that moment and he thought he had more time and then he just kept missing that last shot and it's probably a superstition that he has to make it.
Well, because he would shoot it and then he was taking a step towards the line and then it would go in and out and then he'd step back.
And he asked for the ball back and take it again.
Right.
So here's the thing, though. It's still disrespectful.
I was wrong.
You're superstitious. Yeah. Come out and say, look, I didn't realize the anthem was starting that quickly. The clock was a little different, but I have the superstition where I have to make the last shot, and I just kept missing, and it was disrespectful. I shouldn't have done it. Instead, he doesn't even apologize.
Well, if you're Eric Spoelstra, head coach of the Miami Heat, do you say anything to Dwayne Wade? The media asks you about it. What do you say? How do you
if you're Spoelstra?
Yeah, how do
what
you
what do you say?
Yeah, how do you stay on Dwayne Wade's side, right? You got to have D Wade in your corner if you're Coach Spo. That's your best player. But also have
You can pull the Billy Donovan like Billy Donovan did on Monday night after the controversial play in game two in the Spurs Thunder series. Be like, oh, I don't know which play you're talking about. I didn't see that.
Right, right. Well, he didn't want to get fined and all that stuff.
I didn't see that.
Yeah.
I don't know what play you're talking about.
The reason why I bring that up, so I just want to get one itty bitty thing out there. Joe Maddon,
I've heard of him.
They respect him, right? And they like him. Like, it's both.
Okay.
Don't you think?
Yeah, no, absolutely.
I mean, I'm sure there's some guys on there that feel like Jason Hamill last year probably was not thrilled that he was getting taken out of games early. And he's not thrilled now that he's getting taken out of games early. So I don't think he would call Joe Maddon a friend. I don't even know if he respects him. But the majority of the clubhouse does.
Wait, who is that?
Jason Hamill.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's one guy. And one of the comments from Justin Grimm today I kind of, sort of, thought was a little bit of a... Just made me think that Joe Maddon is not necessarily his favorite. Not that he doesn't respect him. But I asked Maddon today, how do you get a guy to like you and to respect you? Like, which is kind of what, like, Eric Spoelstra in this situation with D Wade. Like, how would you handle it? So this is what Maddon said, and I think that this works for, like, across every single field out there.
Instinctively, naturally, I can't tell you that I contrive that. I can't tell you that I actually work at creating a line in the sand that they can't walk over that I can't. I think it's like organic is probably the right, and it's a very popular word these days, but I think it's more about that. Listen, and I'm not kidding. I mean, I'm over 50 by several years, but I so identify with what they're doing and how they do it. The one thing I always wanted to be able to do is remain contemporary. I think if you remain contemporary, you remain employable. The group that chooses to not remain contemporary only because they have to be locked into old beliefs, at some point you become unemployable. So it's easy. I'm not doing that intentionally. I just believe that's the way you should be. Jimmy Reese, who I worked with the Angels, lived to be 90-some years old and was Babe Ruth's roommate at one point. Jimmy was the best, and I always thought, when I worked with Jimmy in the 80s into the 90s, I think he passed away in the early 90s, I always thought here's a 90-some-year-old man that is so contemporary, and that's why he's pertinent among these young players. So it's just a matter of you can't – we all think we're right all the time. We think the way we do things are right all the time, and sometimes you don't see everybody else's take on things, and that's the mistake. Even though I may not like some of the music, that's okay. I like some. But then again, I like some of the music. Methods of dress, I'm in. I'm good. Cars, things like that.
What is he talking about anymore?
Totally in. I just think it's if you permit yourself an openness to be absorbed in what's going on, then you can. And if you want to fight that for some strange reason, which a lot of people do, then at some point you deem yourself unemployable.
Okay.
Did you?
I totally
get that.
I am like Joe Maddon's biggest fan, maybe. I love Joe Maddon.
I thought that was an amazing quote.
I love listening to Joe Maddon. Dude, that was like the most long-winded answer. Like, I understood like the first 20 seconds, like exactly what he was saying.
He's saying.
But like, wow, that went on for a long time and it got a little weird.
I was loving it. I couldn't have loved it more. How do you become respected, but that you have to be in there with them? He's coaching a bunch of 22-year-olds. They like X, they like Y, they like Z. So if he's going to be old man in the clubhouse that, I don't like that music, I don't like the way you do things, I don't like your tattoos, I don't like whatever it would be.
Okay, yeah.
Then he becomes unrelatable. And he can't lead these guys.
But I'm just talking about all the stuff he threw in there that was... Jimmy Reese was Babe Ruth's roommate.
Well, you're saying this 90-year-old dude.
By the way, I love how he said that he's over 50. Joe Maddon, 62. I'm over 50 by a considerable amount of years.
Dan Long, did you feel that cut? Do you love Maddon more now after that moment?
My opinion of him was pretty high to begin with.
Okay. Well, I'm glad we've established that.
But, I think it gives a good indication of, you know, because he does have a team of 21-year-old, you know, 22-year-olds, 20 guys from 22 to 26. How hard is it? How hard must it be for a guy in his 60s to identify with that?
I mean, he's clearly saying that you can't just be on your. You got to get with the times, and you got to be in there with them. They got to be able to feel that you're, you know, fighting the same battle, and then they're going to respect you, and then they'll probably like you too. And by the way, the Nationals had the bases loaded after Justin Grimm walked one batter to make it first and second, and they intentionally walked Bryce Harper again to load up the bases.
Was it first and second, or was it second and third when they walked Harper?
First and second.
So second time in this game, they've intentionally walked Bryce Harper without first base open. Bryce Harper now has 6 walks in today's game. It ties the most in baseball since 1900, the most since Jeff Bagwell had 6 in 1999.
I think Joe Maddon's going to keep doing that until you prove that you can beat us.
Okay, and then one of my biggest pet peeves in baseball just happened is Ryan Zimmerman. Slid into first base. On a grounder to third, I think he may have been able to beat out if he just run through the bag.
And by the way, that was a perfect inning for me. It took forever. We have one more segment to go. I might leave you.
Why don't you just leave now?
I might leave you alone for it.
Go to Wrigley and do not your job.
It is my job. It's my duty. It's my life.
Like, I'm really impressed that you went there today before the show. You got that great sound bite from Joe Maddon and his 5-minute answer to your relatively simple question.
And let it be known, I cut out the first 25 seconds of the answer.
You cut that down?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
I did.
Wait, how long was that cut, Dan?
1:10.
No.
It wasn't any more than that.
Almost 2 minutes, 1:52.
Okay,
152.
Fine, 1:52.
Yeah, and you cut out 25 seconds. So.
And that was after, by the way, that was the last question in the press conference. I was debating not answering it because we had been there for a while. But he seems to, like, enjoy talking. So.
Well, yeah, he does. And I like listening to him. He did a half inning with Len and JD on the broadcast in spring training, like, basically was analyzing the plays as they happened. Like, ball hit out the center. See, what happened right there was he moved it. I'm like,
well, there was one.
What manager ever does that?
Well, there was one question today asked by Phil Rogers talking about Jake Arrieta's throwing more fastballs this year. Do you think that's because he's XYZ? He's like, you know, that's interesting. I'm thinking that my first inclination would be that's because he's been behind in the count more this year than he has last year, but I'd have to double check that, but that's my first inclination. Like, I mean, it was, oh. Right? I mean, it's another level. It is a complete another level.
I mean, baseball already has more of a candor to it in terms of, you know, not every single manager is paranoid like a football coach who won't ever answer any of your questions, which we have documented evidence of on this show.
He's the best. Right now, if you called up John Fox, head coach of your Chicago Bears, and asked him what he was having for dinner, he'd say, I don't know. Can't.
Actually, I mean, he would actually. We probably have a nice conversation. John Fox is very pleasant to talk to when we're out doing on-the-record interviews.
I don't believe you.
I swear to God. I enjoy talking to John Fox. But as soon as those microphones and TV cameras come out, and it's like nothing's being said, even though words are coming out.
Do you have a John Fox home phone number that we can try during this break?
No, I don't.
Can you get that done for the benefit of the show at some point?
We're not calling.
I'm not sure I'm up for cold calling John Fox.
Yeah. Hey,
I don't know you should be.
I'll do it, Dan. I'll come in there.
Not very professional.
Nah.
Hey, we got to take a time out, wrap things up here on the show.
Brian,
so Mark Carmen can get to Wrigley Field for some reason.
Brian Noonan's coming up at 6. Maybe he wants to get here at 5:55. 720 WGN.
Text here from the 312 saying, Wade's incredibly lame excuse, very disrespectful. I kind of agree. I think the excuse is almost just as disrespectful as the action of shooting during the Canadian National Anthem.
How good are you with your own National Anthem etiquette?
Me?
Yeah, like
I'm pretty responsible about it.
You're standing in the press box. It's a Sunday. It's the Bears. It's the Lions. You're at Soldier Field. You've got a little bit leftover donut in front of you, the national anthem's going. How often does that donut end up in your mouth?
Never.
Never?
Never. Never.
How often?
I'll say the closest thing I've ever done to not being attentive right when it starts is like completing a tweet I was working on completing a pregame note like for maybe 3 seconds at the top.
So you will allow yourself the completion sort of similar to what Dwayne Wade was doing. You are the Dwayne Wade of media. You needed to finish that tweet before the anthem went. Wade needed to finish his warm-up, make his last shot before the national anthem.
But, however, if I noticed a typo 2 seconds in, I wouldn't go in and say, oh, I got to fix that right away.
Are you sure?
Yes. I mean, I'm literally talking about putting the period, and I'm just being honest with you.
Are you?
I'm certainly not starting a tweet.
What happens if you are like mid-anthem, you have a thought in your head, like you see somebody do something wild on the field during the anthem, will you start tweeting?
No. I'll wait till it's over.
Okay. I don't have great anthem etiquette. I'm
really?
Just going to be honest. I do for the most part, but like my mind starts going and I sort of forget. It happens more often than I'd like to care to admit, especially on 720 WGN, that my mind will wander during the anthem.
Well,
and then I'm all of a sudden doing something and then I realize, myself, don't do that, you're to the anthem.
And what you're bringing up is like, it's so, I mean, especially in sports, you hear the anthem every single game.
Right. I mean,
right? It sort of gets... I mean, it sort of just kind of gets ingrained in your head and more routine, and it loses it certainly loses, I think, its luster and purpose at some point when you hear it every single day.
Would it surprise you to learn that perhaps during the...
And it shouldn't, by the way. I'm just saying what's in the mind of probably these athletes' heads, and me too when I'm covering a game. So Dwayne Wade's defense, that's probably exactly what happened. He's just not really thinking about it. But the reality is, you're not a reporter up in the press box. You're on the court. Everyone
in the arena is looking
at you shooting, while every other person on the court has their hands either on their heart or behind their back, looking up at the Canadian flag.
Speaking of having my hands on my heart and yours too, looking up, Brian Noonan's coming up right now. Do we have one more break here, Dan?
No, we don't.
We don't.
He told you that during the last break.
I was thinking about the anthem.
You were too busy watching the Cubbies.
One out.
Which is fine.
Bottom 12. Ben Zobrist down first.
Mark Carman's rooting against the Cubs right now, so the game continues.
So I can go to the game.
So you could go to the game.
Yes, and we can all celebrate.